Issues, Etc., regular guest Pastor Stephen Parks on why your congregation should join the Issues, Etc. 300.
If I could, I'd just like to challenge any Lutheran pastors that are listening to consider becoming one of the congregations that supports Issues, Etc. My own congregation is a very small church, and I know it can be difficult to try and budget $1,000 a year to become one of the Issues, Etc. 300. But if you're being blessed by this, as I know you are, and if your congregation is being blessed by this, as I know that it is, I submit to bring it to the congregation to prayerfully consider supporting the outreach of Issues, Etc., not only here in the United States, but also around the world. Thank you so much for what you do.
Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget. Simply go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues, Etc. The Issues, Etc. 300.
Hello, Mr. President. There's really no laws about the abortion law and when a woman can and can't have an abortion, whether it's 2 months or 8 months. What is your view on that?
A very interesting question asked by a woman of President Obama at a town hall meeting Tuesday in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The president's answer sounded somewhat familiar, and you get the sense that he understands a few things about abortion. He did assert that there are laws on the books restricting abortion, but he repeated, now kind of a standard mantra, safe, legal, and rare. He thinks that President Clinton's wisdom should prevail on the issue of abortion. We'll hear his entire answer and a response from Scott Klusendorf in the last 15 minutes here of Issues, Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, September the 30th. Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute and author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. Scott, welcome back.
Todd, good to be with you.
Well, we heard the question. Here is President Obama's answer.
I actually think, there are laws, both federal, state, and constitutional, that are in place. This is an area where I think Bill Clinton had the right formulation a couple of decades ago, which is abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. I think that it's something that all of us should recognize is a difficult, sometimes, oftentimes tragic situation that families are wrestling with. I think the families and the women involved are the ones who should make the decision, not the government. But I do think, actually, that there are a whole host of laws on the books that, after a certain period, the interests shift such that you can have some restrictions, for example, on late-term abortions, and appropriately so. So there is, in fact, a set of rules in place. Now, people still argue about it and still deeply disagree about it, and that's part of our democratic way.
Scott, your response to the president's answer.
Well, so much is wrong here, Todd. First of all, if abortion does not unjustly take the life of a defenseless human being, why do we care if it's rare or not? I mean, do we care how many teeth are pulled each year? So this idea that it should be safe, legal, and rare, my question is, Mr. President, why should it be rare? Secondly, the federal government is very involved in abortion. The president is being very misleading here. When people tell me that the federal government should stay out of the abortion issue, I ask what they mean. In other words, do they think the federal courts should get out of the abortion business? Because that's exactly what has happened in our country. With Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton, one branch of the federal government, the courts, has co-opted the issue, taken it away from the other two branches, the legislative and executive, and in essence told the people of this country, you have no say on this issue, judges will decide it for you. That is the federal government being involved in the abortion issue. And as a result of that, we now have abortion being legal through all 9 months, and that's where the president also was misleading. He knows very well what Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton state. And he knows very well that because he cited Roe v. Wade when he opposed protecting babies that survive abortion. He said it would be wrong to be inconsistent with Roe v. Wade. And he cited Roe v. Wade, which presumes he knows what it says. Well, here's what Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton say, Todd. They say that abortion must remain legal if needed to protect the woman's, quote, health. The word health is defined in Doe versus Bolton, the companion case to Roe v. Wade, as being so broad you could drive a Mack truck through it. Family situations, economic situations, emotional situations all play into the well-being, quote, unquote, of the patient. Therefore, those factors make it absolutely impossible to destroy, or I should say, to hold up any law against late-term abortion because anything can be construed as a health reason. So the president was just being misleading there, I'm afraid.
The president also said that the choice ought to remain with the family and not with the government. That's odd, given the fact that I believe he opposes parental consent laws or that kind of minimal regulation.
That's exactly right. He does oppose that, and we know that because when he was a senator in Illinois, he voted against a bill that prohibited taking minors against state or over state lines against parental or in spite of parental knowledge, taking them across state lines to get abortions. And he did not think parents had to be consulted before their kids could be taken by government officials or school officials across state lines to get abortions behind the parents' back. So you're exactly right. But there's another thing here, too. He said that there are laws in place against late-term abortions. Well, wait a minute. If the decision resides with the families and the women, he said, then any law against abortion is unjust. By definition, he can't have his cake and eat it too. Either these laws are just, which means women don't have a final say, or they're unjust because the law is interfering with the decision of families.
He said that it is oftentimes a difficult decision, and this is something we've heard from President Obama many times. He talks about it being a difficult moral decision. What does he mean? Can you parse for us what he's trying to say there, other than simply an expression of sympathy for someone in a difficult spot?
Well, what he's trying to do is sow the belief that this issue is so morally complex that there can't be one right way to think about it. Therefore, we've got to leave it to individual choice. And that's the hidden premise in his argument, that because there is disagreement, because there is difficulty involved, there's no right answer. Well, I suppose 150 years ago, people thought slavery was a difficult issue. There were all kinds of economic factors involved. There were reasons why one could argue keeping slaves where they were was a good thing for the rest of society. But notice that in that argument in favor of slavery, I am assuming that the slaves in question are not human beings. Would the president say it was a difficult decision that required us to leave it to individual choice if someone was proposing killing two-year-olds? No, we would not have any confusion at all. The only reason he can appeal to confusion is he is assuming the unborn aren't human. But that's the very question he needs to answer. And so far, whether it's his stem cell policy or any other issue, he has not dealt with that question. He's just ignored it.
How do you evaluate this president when it comes to not only his rhetoric, but the positions he's taken in the past and the ones that he has staked out presently vis-a-vis abortion? Is this president uninformed or what?
I think he's far too bright to be uninformed. I think he knows what he's doing. I think it's deliberate. And this is a guy who is a pro-abortion ideologue. He wants to see abortion advanced. When you're unwilling to protect children who survive abortions and you are willing to deny them that protection three separate times in a voting situation, you know what you're doing. So, no, I don't think it's ignorance. He gives lip service to those who disagree with him, but he doesn't entertain for a moment their arguments.
And yet it seems as though responses like these, and Scott, we've heard them before from President Obama and others who favor unrestricted abortion, suffice for some reason. They sound like complete answers. How would you respond to someone who says, I thought he was able to give a pretty good answer to this woman's question on abortion, about a minute and a half before we close up?
Well, the first question I would ask is, tell me what a complete answer would look like in this case. He did not answer the question, what is the unborn? He left that alone. He did not show how the absence of consensus means an absence of truth. He made no attempt whatsoever to argue that the unborn were the kind of things that could be killed simply because the women involved in the decision want to do it. So he left all of the big questions unanswered. Although I would not agree with him, he would have been far more intellectually honest if he said, look, the unborn are not human beings. Furthermore, they lack self-awareness. Therefore, they have no right to life. Therefore, having an abortion is no problem. Now, there's all kinds of problems with that argument. I mean, people in reversible comas lack self-awareness, and we can't kill them. But he made no attempt to even put out a defense for his view. He simply very quietly dismissed his opponents and assumed the truth of his position. And I find that to just be intellectually dishonest. And I would ask the person who thought that his speech was, or his answer was, a good one, to explain to me what a good answer would look like, because that doesn't appear to be one.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. He's author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. You can purchase The Case for Life under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Scott, thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Thanks, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk to Dr. Alistair McGrath of Oxford University about the Christian mind. Then Monday, a big, big show. We're going to discuss the new perspective on Paul. This is one we've been working on for a long, long time. The new perspective on Paul put forth by Bishop N.T. Wright. Dr. Andrew Das of Elmhurst College will be our guest Monday on Issues Etc. Folks, you still have about 23 hours to register to win two $50 gift certificates to Concordia Publishing House by inviting your friends to be our fans at Facebook, facebook.com/issuesetc. Send us a copy of the friend invitation and the number of friends that you invited to contest@issuesetc.org, and we'll announce the winners Friday on the program. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.